Hello and welcome to the Ship Energy Podcast. My name is Mark Williams, broadcasting to you from a rather cold and chilly Cambridgeshire in the UK. My guest on the podcast this week is Robin Bide. Robin is an equity research analyst in the City of London. He works for a leading independent investment bank in the London market called Zeus Capital. Robin has worked in the city for over 20 years as an analyst covering industrial and transport companies, advising on dozens of transactions over the years, including several in the maritime space. Prior to joining Zeus, Robin worked at HSBC, at KPMG and Cantor Fitzgerald. I've been keen to get Robin on the podcast for some time to discuss the role of capital markets in the energy transition. So, Robin, welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Hello.
Hello, good to have you on. As I say, I'm sort of keen to discuss the role of capital markets in the energy transition because a lot of what's happening is new and therefore not necessarily the intuitively the kind of things, kind of technologies that the IPO market is interested in, which perhaps is for more mature businesses. But it's also being promoted by a lot of large corporates who may already be public companies. So I was wondering if you could give us your perspective on investor attitudes to transport decarbonisation.
Certainly. Thanks for having me on, Mark, and I'm very pleased to be here. So as you say, I'm an equity investment research analyst in the city. I've been looking at transportation companies for more than 20 years. Just as a little bit of a disclaimer, I am talking in a personal capacity today, and nothing we discuss should be considered investment advice on individual companies or instruments. So just a little bit of housekeeping and that's now out of the way. So my perspective on investor attitudes to transport decarbonisation, I think it's probably best to set a bit of context to this issue. I mean, the first thing I would say is, you know, global supply chain, it is a large component of the global economy. It's probably 15% of global GDP, and growth trends have been above annual GDP, reflecting the complexity and development of supply chains over the past 30 years. So for energy transition and decarbonisation or any other policy consideration, you know, the sector certainly cannot be ignored by governments and regulators, and also the industry itself is going to be a key player in the change agenda. I think the other thing to say, and fairly obviously, as with all sectors and with all of us, you know, we've experienced an exceptional 2 years through the COVID pandemic, and I hope everyone out there is well. But trading in the sector in global transportation has been surprisingly strong. You know, from parcel delivery companies, air freight carriers, container shipping lines, many of these companies have reported revenues and profits all-time highs, combined with expanded operating margins. And also, very few companies in this sector have had to raise emergency funds for balance sheet support or repair. And that's been reflected in stock prices and returns. So if you just look at a few companies, a few of the larger companies in this space, Maersk has delivered an 85% total return over the last couple of years, Hapag-Lloyd 200%, Grindrod Shipping 300%, and even some of the non-shipping names have delivered good returns. So, for example, Deutsche Post DHL, which is a global behemoth and a bit of a bellwether for the global logistics sector, has returned more than 50% over the past couple of years. So looking forward, so looking into 2022 and 2023, I think the investment outlook is more complex. I'm pretty sure that COVID-related supply chain disruption will start to slowly clear as participants in the global economy come back on stream. But there are considerable cost headwinds to consider, you know, now and also coming down the line. And this is not just for fuel and for workers. This is also rising taxes, rising safety regulation, some linked to COVID, rising insurance costs, for example. So, you know, to set this issue in context, I think the earnings outlook for this year for global transportation and for most sub-verticals, including maritime, is going to be more negative, with lower growth and some margin compression. So the big issue right now for city analysts and for fund managers is quantifying those additional costs, the impact on margins, and then how to value companies and assets in this new world, if you like. So the reason I've just talked through these issues is, in my view, this feeds directly into how asset managers and investors will view ESG matters, decarbonisation, and energy transition in the next few years. I mean, to put it simply, in the past couple of years, against the backdrop of pretty healthy returns for investors, there's probably been less scrutiny of the performance of energy transition actions, assets, investments than there might have been. Now, that's likely to change with lower potential returns. So I think this is a great point to discuss. I mean, ESG decarbonisation themes are certainly rising up the agenda for all investors across all asset classes, so not just equities, but debt and other instruments too. But I think for 2022 and 2023, there's more complexity, returns are likely to be lower, and I think that will lead to closer scrutiny of the performance of these kinds of assets.
All right. So you think we're at the moment, we're in the kind of post-COVID recovery pattern, which is going to be at the forefront of investor considerations, and that, you know, they're taking a closer look at the performance of individual assets or corporations, then the ESG concerns will come up.
Yes, I think that's right. Yes.
Okay. So it may be that shipping companies have a year or two of grace then to try and put some ESG plans into place, put some ESG actions into place if they perceive that those are going to be advantageous for themselves if they are seeking investment in the future.
Yeah, I think another good point. I mean, the short answer really is that any company in any sector seeking funds from the capital markets needs to understand the requirements of the funders, of the people giving you money. And fund managers are generally instructed by their investment committees or external funders to consider ESG matters as part of their decision-making processes. I think COP26 has added to the urgency for companies to work more closely with investors, regulators, governments on these kind of matters. I think probably the difference now compared to, say, 3 years ago is almost all asset managers, small, large, focused just on the UK or focused globally, will ask and will want to discuss with companies, with analysts, ESG and energy transition matters. So, you know, in my role as the analyst, you know, fund managers will demand some analysis of ESG traits. And, you know, I'm expected to have answers to their questions. And I think, again, there's a sort of level of complexity that's worth discussing here. I mean, I think energy transition, I'm sure many of your listeners can see this too, for all sectors is going to be pretty expensive, not just in terms of capital expenditure and rotation of operating assets, but also in terms of compliance with global, regional, national regulations. Now, to my thinking, that favours larger companies. Mm-hmm. And in some respects, that is a concern for all of these, for the sector and for all the subsectors. So perhaps if you look at Maersk or Hapag-Lloyd and what they've been saying recently in their presentations, you can see that both those companies have very well-developed sustainability, energy transition, net zero plans. But to put it bluntly, if you look at, say, fuel transition, there's clearly a huge issue for the maritime sector about which path to take. Now, are we talking about green ammonia? Are we talking about green methanol or LNG? Or perhaps all three as a primary new fuel or as a new fuel? Now, a larger operator can develop the infrastructure and their fleet with some flexibility, and they can retain optionality over which path to follow. They'll also have better technical support and access to capital. But I think, you know, for smaller companies, this is a lot more tricky. So I think there's an inherent risk in a lot of what's going on globally at the moment. The risk here is that governments and regulators, by demanding change too rapidly, the risk is that you can drive out innovation and flexibility, the innovation and flexibility that you get from smaller companies, from newer companies, from startup businesses. And at the same time, you create too much concentration in too few hands with all the negatives for customers and the market and market outcomes that implies. So just going back to your question, so ESG certainly does matter in the context of seeking fresh capital from asset managers. I think all companies coming to the capital market should be acutely aware of that. You know, you can't avoid having a considered response to the questions you'll be asked. It matters to us as analysts. So, you know, ESG matters, net zero, energy transition are all factors we need to consider alongside our usual methods for valuing companies. But again, I think this needs to be seen in the overall context of those asset managers seeking a required rate of return.
Yeah, I think that this sort of motion towards corporatization has many drivers, but definitely the policy push is one of them, isn't it? And the flip side of that, I suppose, is that it's smaller companies that don't have access to capital or don't have such easy access to capital, maybe we raise the possibility of them being left with stranded assets in the future if regulations aren't grandfathered. I was going to ask if you think investors have any concerns about the possibility of being left with stranded assets if companies can't raise the capital to renew their fleets.
Yeah, I think you raise another really sort of fascinating topic, and you know we've started thinking about this a lot, partly as an investment opportunity, frankly. And I think you have to delineate here between asset-heavy operators and asset-light operators. Now, owners of vessels and air freighters and trucks are considered asset heavy. Asset light operators might be freight forwarders or freight brokers. So owners of assets tend to outperform when the economy is strong and in an inflationary environment, you know, where they sort of have the opportunity to become a price maker. But the flip side is they also run the risk of asset obsolescence over the medium term. So I think the other thing to consider here is CapEx and asset replacement cycles. So my thoughts at the moment are that most global logistics maritime operators will have enough time and contingency in their existing asset management replacement cycles to make an orderly transition. You know, in other words, if we're talking about net zero in 2035 or 2050, you know, that is obviously still some years away and well within the horizon, the normal horizon for replacing your assets. And I think the other things to consider here, on the supply side, OEM capacity is not yet really geared up globally for mass replacement. So to give you an illustration, I was reading earlier that Tesco's in the UK has just introduced a total of one fully electric HGV into their fleet.
Yeah.
I mean, that is out of a total of, I think, 1,300 tractor units in the UK business.
Yes, it's still early days, isn't it? Yeah.
So, you know, this is a slow process and most businesses will have time. It's still early days. And the other thing here is the technology and the infrastructure, for example, to support new fuels is just not really in place, not regionally, you know, regionally nor globally. So, you know, I think every transportation company will want to be considering these issues right now and acting. But, you know, we are some way off a fire sale of stranded assets.
Good to know. I think that will be of some relief to the majority of independent vessel owners, at the very least. So, from your side, from the analyst side, though, are you already including climate metrics in your analysis? Are you looking at things like the carbon intensity index or emission reductions or things like carbon earnings at risk? Or do you use TCFD measures or TFCD, I should say?
The short answer is yes. So we take into account a range of measures in our analysis, but I think I would truthfully say that we do not have a settled methodology for all companies and all sectors at the moment. And you know, defining KPIs, measuring KPIs, and making like-for-like comparisons is pretty complex, even for one company year on year, let alone between companies and between sectors. The other thing I'd say is that the landscape for setting these frameworks is still shifting pretty significantly and pretty rapidly. I mean, for UK companies, I've used the framework set out by the London Stock Exchange for its Green Mark Award, which I think is actually a pretty good framework and a good starting point for many of the companies I follow. I've also used various MSCI frameworks and criteria and looked at requirements for TCFD and so on. But they, you know, I would say, you know, as I think we can all see, that there are a number of competing frameworks out there, competing actions by governments and regulators. you know, the UK, I think, is probably leading at the moment, you know, from the 1st of January 2021. So last year, there was a requirement for all UK premium listed companies to disclose certain facts in their annual reports. And there's further tightening of those reporting rules going on right now. And there again, you know, at COP26, the IFRS board, so the International Financial Reporting Standards Board, announced that they would also be starting up a new standards board focus on sustainability reporting, which will include TCFD, but also go further. So, you know, it is a shifting landscape. We do try and adapt to this shifting landscape as quickly as we can. So we have to assess ESG matters. Clearly, it's taking time for a settled framework to emerge. And I think if you talk to asset managers, fund managers, they would say the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's fair to say that this is an area of investment analysis that's still in research and development.
Yes, there's no magic measuring stick out there yet that everyone can use. It's not like you can use the asset ratio across all your investors or all your investments.
No, that's absolutely right. And, you know, as I say, it's an area of investment analysis that is still in our, it's very important, but probably still in the R&D phase for many on the buy side and the sell side.
I've just one last question before you go, and it's a question that I ask everybody who comes onto the podcast to do with marine fuels. You know, we think we're moving to a multi-fuel future. You know, we're going to have to switch out of hydrocarbons and into hydrogen-based fuels for liquid fuels, whether that's liquid hydrogen or ammonia or methanol, which is still a hydrocarbon but has only one carbon atom. Mm-hmm. Or we're going to have to move into electricity. Do you see a winner out of all of that, in, you know, when you're looking at the wider transport economy, not just for shipping, but you're looking at road and rail and aviation as well? Is there one fuel that looks like it's gaining momentum amongst investors and industry specialists?
It's very interesting. So I have to say, if you look, for example, at HGVs, so obviously heavy goods vehicles, and what's going on in that space, there are significant headwinds to widespread adoption of all electric vehicles to do with weight and space. So heavier vehicles and less freight space. But there are much larger considerations linked to this issue about OEM capacity. So there are a number of OEMs globally who are now setting up to produce large fleets of all-electric vehicles, heavy goods vehicles. So what I guess I'm saying here is, and I think that's probably the way that industry will go. I have to say I'm not so sure about the maritime industry. I think there are competing technologies almost at an earlier stage, if you like. So partly I think this will be driven by, it won't necessarily be driven by the customers, it will be driven by how OEMs view the world and markets and what they think they can build capacity for and how they can implement that capacity and roll out fleets. And it might not necessarily be the most economically rational path at first look. So this is a fascinating issue. And I think just going back to the contextual points, if we are facing a year of more volatile earnings and potentially lower growth and a squeeze on margins and cash and capex, it's very difficult for many companies in all sectors, in any sector, to say, okay, we'll choose three. You know, there's going to be a lot of pressure internally and externally and from the OEMs to decide quite quickly within the industry which technology is going to be adopted, and everybody goes for that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, that is, it's a really interesting take on it, because we focus so much in the work we do within the maritime space on the fuel technology. We don't give very much thought to the capacity of OEMs to produce the machinery or the vehicles that will use that technology. So it's unique in the conversations I've had on these podcasts to get that perspective. So thank you very much for that. That in itself, people out there in podcast land, was reason enough to listen to this for the last 25 minutes or so.
Well, thank you, Mark.
But speaking of 25 minutes or so, we are coming to the end. So, Robin, thank you very much for coming on.
No, you're welcome. Great to talk to you, Mark, as ever. And we should do this again.
Yes, absolutely. It's always good to get people on. But I think later in the year, we're going to try and expand the technology so we can add two guests to the podcast so that we can have a wider ranging conversation than just four folk out there having to listen to me. But no, it's great to have you on, Rob, and always good to hear you and good to hear your sage and wise advice and words of wisdom. Thank you to you and thank you to everybody out there in podcast land, and have a really good week. And we look forward to you joining us for the next Ship Energy podcast very soon. Thanks and goodbye.